You guys are coming, it's back across Canada, coming to Sherbrooke next week. Have you ever made a stop in Sherbrooke before?
I don't think so, you know. I don't think we have.
Yeah, I was trying to recall if I'd ever thought or heard of you guys coming through before. But obviously, yeah. you grew up in, or were born in Montreal.
Yeah.
From Quebec. Is there a difference? I mean, you toured the world now. Is there a difference in say, Quebec, particularly some of the smaller towns outside of Montreal, doing shows there than, say, anywhere else in the world?
No, it's always nice, actually, to play in Quebec. I find, you know, actually, probably Quebec has livelier audiences than the rest of Canada, generally. And the only thing I'd compare, or I'd say about that, is that there's some places in the U.S. that the audiences are just really enthusiastic, and you don't really ever see that in Canada as much, you know.
But really, it's like really excited to see you guys, or?
Yeah, all that, and they're just, you know, the energy level of them, I guess, being excited to see a live band in a lot of places is can be different, you know.
If let's talk actually about that live aspect for a second. There's been across Canada and even in the United States, there's been, especially since you guys got started, a sort of a jump after a reduction of the amount of cities you hit on a tour, and the amount of kind of towns that you're going to cross into as you tour. And you guys kind of had a big influence on that back in your early days. I mean, it seemed like the Cowboy Junkies were willing to literally play anywhere when you guys got started.
Yeah, well, you know, we didn't really have a choice. It was we were booking shows ourselves and getting in our station wagon, and you just sort of went, you know, wherever anybody would have you. So, and especially in Canada where the distances are so long, you just find what, is there something in between here and there and try to get something going.
What's that like? I've done cross Canada once. I did it by train.
Yeah.
But you guys have done it multiple times now. What is the expanse like? Touring, I mean, you'll do a show here and the next one's not for another 9 hours away at best.
Or longer sometimes. Yeah, I mean, it's hard, you know. Luckily, once you're at the tour bus level, you just go to sleep on the tour bus and you wake up in the next town. But when you're starting out and you have to do all the driving yourself for those first few years, it's really, really rough. And also, you can't just ignore the winter months.
Yeah, you've got to have. There's got to be a love for what you're doing because the money is never there in the early days, and the distance is almost unfathomable to most people.
Yeah.
Now, you guys started, I said earlier you were from Montreal, but you kind of got your start in Toronto. But before that, prior to that, before you started the Cowboy Junkies, I know you, with the Hunger Project, you were in New York City, mm-hmm. and then England. But nothing really took off there. What was it once you came back to Toronto and got the start with the Cowboy Junkies? What was the music scene that you were able to tap into that perhaps, I mean, the idea for many musicians starting New York City, London, those are the hubbubs.
Yeah.
Why did Toronto end up being the place where things took off?
Yeah, well, it was very interesting because I think what it was at the time was there was a bunch of bands doing the same thing that we were interested in doing, which was revisiting American roots music and reinterpreting it. So that you had your Blue Rodeos and your Handsome Ned. I don't know if you remember that outfit.
Yeah, Handsome, you know? Ned, Handsome Ned and Blue Rodeo, especially in the early days, they had a kind of a pop sensibility to them that perhaps you guys didn't.
Yeah.
But in the end, everybody, I was gonna ask about that. When did the idea, there seemed to be a general idea with Handsome Ned and Blue Rodeo and yourselves that we were going to push to this classic country, this roots influence of things. Where did that come from?
Well, you know, I think it was just in the air. It wasn't, you know, it was a surprise to us, too, actually, because that's not really the direction that we wanted to go with Cowboy Junkies when we first started. But in our case, we were touring around in the U.S. and listening to radio stations in the South and hearing, like, real country music for the first time, really, because, you know, up in Canada, you didn't hear the classic artists much. And, you know, that really struck us. And when we came back, you know, I remember sitting down with Greg and Jim from Blue Rodeo and talking about that stuff, and they said, yeah, you know, us too. That's what we've been listening to lately, and, you know, we're really moving towards that as well. So I don't know what it was. It was just this, I guess this kind of a void in the pop world where there wasn't a lot of good pop music at the time,
mm-hmm.
and people were just interested in revisiting older stuff. And it wasn't just us. It was all over the U.S. It was happening with Lyle Lovett and Steve Earle and, you know, a bunch of other Texas acts and Nashville people. So, you know, it just there's a weird kind of happening that occurred there.
It came. I imagine you guys had a fair influence coming to some degree from the punk era, and it seemed to kind of follow that in some places moved to the metal, and everybody else kind of made the move towards the country and the classic country influence.
Right. I mean, the punk thing was huge for us because that was our start with our other bands. Mm-hmm. That's what drove that, and so we always had that sensibility in our approach to our non-musicianship. when we started this band, we can really, you know, we didn't have a lot of musicianship, so we're sort of limited in what we could do. But we had our favorite kind of sounds, I guess, from the punk era. One, you know, probably the biggest one for us would have been Joy Division, in terms of you know, that's a spatial kind of sound that we're interested in. And so that's really what we were going for when we sat down and did this band.
I think it
just started out differently because we were forced to be really quiet because in our rehearsal space it was uninsulated, and our neighbors would complain. And so, you know, there's a lot of environmental factors too that led to the sound.
I was going to say, once you understand that your influences were either from the classic country vein of things or, say, Joy Division, it speaks a lot to the sound that the Cowboy Junkies actually ended up catching. I mean, there's still that whole, a very spatial sense. I mean, you guys, I think a lot of people know, did the single microphone kind of experimenting back in the days with the Trinity Session and stuff.
Beginning to understand.
Little bit about, if you can, for a second, where the idea to record in that style came from.
Well, you know, we had a band in Mike and I had a band in London called Germinal, and when it came time to try to record something, we found this guy who just used two microphones and recorded directly onto a Beta video deck. You know, so it was digital at the time, it was very primitive. But so we always had that experience in mind when it came time to recording with the Junkies. And we were just lucky to meet Peter Moore in Toronto, who was doing that. He was an audio purist, and he was the one who, I think the only one in Canada with the Calrec microphone at the time, which is that single mic, and, you know, the digital deck. So we did the first album, What's Up Earth Now, like that, in our garage. And when it came time to do Trinity, Peter had this idea to put it in a more ambient environment, and he had been in the Trinity Church before recording some, I think, some classical stuff, and so he said, why don't we try to do that? And so that's how that evolved.
The Trinity Session, that was kind of the blow-up album for you guys, but
yeah.
Prior to that, and I think this speaks to there's a different idea of indie music in Canada today. Canada's now the indie capital, but you guys were literally pretty much recording the Trinity Sessions. I think I read somewhere it cost you about $250 with the intention
yeah.
of just making enough money to then do another album, kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't so much it started in the Northwest, and Canada's taken it as the next level with this indie scene, but at the
yeah.
time that the Cowboy Junkies got together, the idea of the indie scene didn't really exist in Canada.
No, it didn't. I mean, there were a handful of bands, I think, probably in each city. Doing something interesting, but there wasn't any kind of, obviously a media focus or industry help or anything like that.
Yeah.
So the bands really stayed independent and really just made it work themselves.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, whether it was Blue Rodeo or Tragically Hip, we all did the same thing. We got in the van and went out for as long as we could, you know, to get it out there.
After the Trinity Sessions came out, and I mean, LA Times picked it as one of the best albums of the year, and it, you know, things started to roll for you. Did you guys realize right off that perhaps you'd become an international act, or was that something that kind of only occurred to you in hindsight?
Well, it sort of took a little while because we released a Trinity record ourselves and toured around for a year before RCA picked it up. So, you know, we'd gotten feedback on it throughout that period. And it was also throughout that period that negotiations, you know, happened for a label deal. So by the time it came out with RCA, it was, it was an old record to us. We'd done it a year and a half earlier almost by the time it came out. And, we didn't expect the reaction to it at all that happened. Like, the first reactions were all critical responses, and they were phenomenal, which made us very happy. But we didn't think that would translate into any kind of hype that happened after that.
No, I was wondering about that, because you listen to it now, and it's obviously a great album, and the critics took to it right off. Did you guys, upon first or even while recording it, know you were perhaps onto something?
Well, not really. I mean, when we were putting the songs together to record, they didn't really sound a lot like that because, we were just doing it in our garage and on stage and stuff. So it wasn't really till we'd done the recording in the church and listened to it the next day and heard the additional, 50% of the sound of it comes from that building. you know, once we'd heard that on the tape, we realized, wow, this is really cool. And it was, but it was really different from what we expected to have recorded, you know, so it was a surprise to us.
Well, a couple of years back, for people who don't know, a couple of years back, you you went back to Trinity, redid the album. The CBC did a documentary about a Trinity Revisited with the Cowboy Junkies. What was it like going back there? Kind of, I guess, because you said the building itself was largely responsible for a lot of the sound on that album. What was it like all those years later, getting back and doing it one more time?
Well, it was great. You know, it was kind of, we were nervous about it at first as an idea, just going back there and doing that and sort of messing with the original thing. But, you know, we had great faith in our director who's from Montreal, who wanted to do this live performance thing, and he's the one who suggested, well, why not redo the Trinity session and maybe bring in other people and something like that. So he evolved the idea. But even so, we were still really nervous going into it until we sat down with everybody and started playing, and it was just so beautiful playing in the room again, just hearing that sound, that we just sort of relaxed and went through it. And luckily, the director was fantastic. It looks great. It sounds great. So we're really happy with it.
Well, you definitely got the sense from the documentary that going into it, there was a certain uncomfortableness with, we captured lightning in a bottle once. Why try and go for it again? But
yeah, exactly.
You know, it worked and it sounded great. I guess speaking to that same vein, I was reading a little bit of research for this interview, and I came across a quote from Margot where she was talking about starting in the early days of the Cowboy Junkies, and she sounds something about being lost in your early 20s and the songs that you guys were covering, be it the Velvet Underground or John Lee Hook or things like that, they were written by guys in their 20s. Now it's been 20 years even since the Trinity sessions. What's changed for you and what stayed the same?
I think, you know, musically what stayed the same for us is you know, the original sound that we discovered with this band. We still love that core sound. So we try not to mess with that too much from record to record. What's evolved certainly is Mike's songwriting, to the point where you know, everything centers around what he's going to be writing. You know, like, so we always try to anticipate and talk to him about what the next record is going to be like. You know, so that's very different from how we first started the band. And, you know, I think we just have a bit more, definitely a bit more musicianship, you know, just from playing this long.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't call us great musicians or anything. If you asked me to do a scale, I couldn't do it. But we've never been interested in that side of it. We're just interested in creating, you know, this space in the music that we've always loved. So that's definitely stayed the same.
What I think is interesting is now the Cowboy Junkies, you guys are generally, you know, viewed as a well-written band, a group that can take a, you know, write a quality song. But in the early days, it was all covers.
Mm-hmm.
But not covers, and people may not know this, not covers that were necessarily recognizable as covers.
Yeah. And a lot of people didn't like that, I think, at first. Like when we tried to get, remember, White Sox First Now played on radio, you know, we sent it to, I think it was CFNY, and there's a blues guy there. And he just hated it because he thought it just messed with the originals too much, you know. So we had those kind of reactions. But, you know, a certain number of people just really dug the sound, which is what it was all about.
Yeah, I was going to say, on the flip side of that, Lou Reed said the cover that you guys did of Sweet Jane was the best of any of the covers he ever heard of the song.
Yeah, that was a nice endorsement.
Yeah, that can never hurt in the feeling good about a department if you're starting to worry a little bit if it was the right angle. So
yeah.
When did the songwriting come?
Well, probably when we started touring White Soft Worth Now, and we were in the States a lot, and just listening to a lot of country music down there, and I think that's when Mike really wanted to start writing songs, was when he heard that stuff. That's what really got him going, and we got really excited about the idea of just taking a lot of those songs and making them our own.
Because it's such a leap to go from somebody who, you know, there's tons of people out there who you're playing other people's records and strumming stuff on a guitar and trying something, but to make the leap to not only write your own songs, which probably a lot of people experiment with in their own time, but to write and perform them in front of an audience, and then take them, in fact, to a studio and decide that there's something you feel need to be recorded. That's a big leap for a band that started out as covers.
Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, it's a leap of faith for sure.
Yeah,
that you set up something in the last couple of years based on other people's songs and getting a little bit of a following around, and then to shift it over to your own writing. It was a big step.
I don't want to throw too much just theoretical your way, but I've noticed we were talking about it. You guys came from a punk background, obviously, and then moved more towards a classic country, as did Blue Roadie and the Da Bands at the time. And there, people moved away from that in the mid-late 90s, but particularly be it within the indie scene in Canada, there seems to be a push back a little bit towards the country roots. Now, you see it perhaps in the Northwest with some bands like Fleet Foxes, but yeah. I was thinking here, like Nico Case and stuff like that. The country vibe seems to have reestablished itself a little bit.
Yeah, and also a folk vibe, a lot of that. So I think it's a whole bigger picture kind of revisitation of older stuff. It's because it's not just simply purist country stuff anymore. And I like a lot of what's going on now. There's a lot of really good ideas.
Do you have some favorites?
probably in that vein. I mean, he's not really in that vein, but Rufus Wainwright, I love.
Oh, terrific.
But again, that for me is a reworking of people like Louis Fury. I don't know if you remember him from Montreal from the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sort of Lou Reed type, almost vaudeville type guy. Yeah, I love his stuff. And there's a lot of artists. And I tend to like the older ones, like Nick Kay, for instance. He's one of my
favorites. There, yeah.
And again, he references American music like crazy in his solo career. And he's been actually a big influence on our band over the years as well.
Speaking to that, Nick Kay being the influence on you, do you now get younger bands? Do you get young artists coming up to you and saying, the Cowboy Junkies, the Trinity Sessions was a huge influence on what we're doing?
Not so much, like occasionally.
Really?
But, I mean, it is pretty particular,
I suppose.
It's not like, a lot of bands are obviously going to reference that stuff. So, it's a very unique kind of band to reference. Actually, for us to hear about it, there might be a lot of it going around, but you wouldn't hear about it. You might run into the occasional people who say that to you.
All right,
No, or you read about it. It's mostly how we hear about it.
Yeah. Finally, I guess, you've got this new limited release acoustic album going around.
Yeah.
Where'd the idea come from to, because you're a fairly basic band to begin with, where'd the idea come from to really shed it down to purely an acoustic album and give some of those tracks a reworking?
Well, over the years, we've always had a kind of an acoustic middle to our set, classic rock style, You break it down to just guitar and vocal and maybe something else. And we just wanted to put a bunch of those recordings together and see what it sounded like and see if it would work as a release. So we thought it would. And so that was genesis of that.
Well, thanks a lot for talking with me. I greatly appreciate that.
Yeah.
Enjoyed the Cowboy Junkies for a long time.
Great.
Now. It's been really nice to get a chance to talk to you. And next Friday, we'll be seeing you right here in Sherbrooke to do a show.
Yeah, look forward to it.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.